Thank you for listening to this edition of In Tune with Opera Philadelphia. My name is Mike Bolton, and we are very happy to have two special guests with us today. Many of you will be familiar with them through their performances with Opera Philadelphia. Katrina Thurman, soprano, who you may remember from our productions of The Barber of Seville and The Elixir of Love, and then also bass baritone Zach James, who was in the world premiere of Breaking the Waves, and also just recently as a chicken, or a cook dressed as a chicken, someone who laid eggs, in Our Love for Three Oranges. Thank you guys both for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I was struck during the run of Love for Three Oranges that you in particular, Zach, have had this broad professional history that didn't tie yourself to opera. And then I thought about you, Katrina, because you're exactly in the same position. And I thought, Opera Philadelphia wants to be the model of a 21st century opera company. And you are, both of you are doing the same exact thing as opera singers, really not confining yourselves to what maybe the conservatory route may have taught you. You're reinventing being a divo or diva in the best sense of that word for the 21st century. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I think it's really important to be flexible and versatile these days. And if you look at our pop icons, they're doing it all as well. You know, Lady Gaga is in American Horror Story and in films and like an incredible actor. And then Renee Fleming is doing Broadway shows. You know, everyone's doing it all. And I think that's okay. And it's an exciting time because of that.
Yeah. What about you, Katrina?
No, I completely agree. I mean, it's funny because I started out in high school and undergrad wanting to be a musical theater singer, not like when I was even younger wanting to have a rock band, but that quickly fizzled. but I started out musical theater and very quickly was urged to go into the classical side by my voice faculty, and that's fine. I'm grateful because that helped me to really gain a very full spectrum and understanding of my voice and instrument. But over the years, it's just kind of come full circle that I've come back to the musical theater and that I've entered into these other realms of being an artist, I guess.
So that's actually a great question. How do you both define yourselves as artists? We can come back to that.
I say because people always say, well, what do you prefer, musical theater or opera? Because you've done, you know, both so much. And I say, you know, whatever wants to pay me, I don't discriminate. But, I mean, then at the same time, there does come a turning point where you get to make choices more often, and it's not just like, oh God, I need a paycheck. Sometimes you get this luxury of a choice. And like last year, or maybe it was the year before, SpongeBob, the musical, kept calling me in to come audition. And I was like, but I have Rusalka, and like, that's going to be so special. And I got to make that choice, and it was cool. But a lot of times you don't get the luxury of choice. You just need money.
Yeah. So, for those who are listening who may not be as familiar with your non-opera work, can you give us some examples of some of the stuff that you've both done to help pay the bills between opera gigs?
Yeah.
I mean, things that are artistically related and not waiting tables, because Lord knows I did that a lot over the years. I stopped a few years back, which is nice. But I've done a fair amount of musical theater. I've done a little crossover. I ended up joining the Actors Equity Union, so I was able to do some stuff with some theaters there, not on the level of Zach, which is pretty awesome, but some stuff.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Philadelphia from New York, I got myself an agent here who works in TV commercial, print ad work, etc. And I was very green, and I kind of started learning how to do stuff, and now I've booked a lot of little things, little ads. You know, I've been a mom, and I've been a chef in some print ads, and I've been in a casino commercial, and it's just fun.
That's awesome.
So that, and then I've done, you know, I've done a lot of musicals for opera companies, and then, you know, I sing opera too, and people pay me, which I like.
And what about you, Zach?
I started in musical theater. I got a musical theater degree, and it took me a long time to figure out what my major was going to be. I did three different universities, three different majors, and finally got this BFA in musical theater from Ithaca College. And but it was while I was there that I started exploring opera on the side, because actually I was at the Bucks County Playhouse in New Hope doing a whole summer stock season, and some of the shows were really fulfilling and great, but then we were also doing Footloose, and it wasn't fulfilling my heart, and I kind of hated it.
Yeah.
So my voice teacher was like, oh, well, let's try opera, and then I did, but I still sort of started my career in musical theater, and I did Broadway for a number of years, and then started doing opera by way of Philip Glass. So, yeah. And that pulled me into that world.
And then one of your more fascinating Facebook posts was about Murphy Brown.
Yeah. I've done a little TV, and, you know, it's been pretty cool.
So how do you, you show up on a commercial shoot or a television set, and you're being the professional equity member or SAG member, and then someone finds out, I'm working at the Metropolitan Opera in the fall. You know, how does that, is there a sense of, what is the sense that you're getting from your colleagues when the opera board comes up?
Do you know, there have been times where I was like a little concerned, like, should I really put that foot forward? Are people going to judge me? Mm-hmm. And honestly, it felt like a very warm reception and interested, usually for my actor colleagues when I'm on some gig, that they're like, oh, that's really cool. And it's just, I think it's less often that they're meeting opera singers in these situations. I think also if you prove yourself not to be a complete fool, then that also is helpful. That's my general.
Yeah, definitely. It's like you have to prove yourself first and you know, I know what I'm doing on TV.
Yeah.
And then you can say like, oh, by the way, I'm
right.
an opera singer.
Right.
Also.
Yeah, because there's this assumption about us opera singers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we don't know how to act.
Yeah, there's
Has that helped or hurt you in an audition process? Or do you make sure your resumes are very separate when you're going in for?
I don't know. When I first moved to New York and I was working with a theater, film, and TV agent, they were like, you have to take this opera stuff off. No one knows what that is. But now it's different, I find, and people, it's a conversation starter. And if your resume is balanced, then
right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But I still have separate ones, you know. Because like in opera, they want to see the date you did it and the conductor you did it with and all this stuff that in other worlds, no one cares.
Yep.
Like, if you put a TV credit on your resume, they don't care when it was or who the director was.
So it doesn't, you're really eliminating it to avoid any sort of confusion.
Yeah, you just tailor
world.
It to the audience.
Yeah,
yeah.
You would any job resume.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. When you've been in those situations, when you're in a non-opera job, what are you bringing from the opera world that's helping you inform your other work and vice versa?
I mean, opera's so hard.
Right?
So it gives you this like focus and confidence that, like, no offense to TV, but it almost is like, oh,
no
wow,
kidding.
TV's a joke. This is so easy. Yeah, because we have, like, the Murphy Brown I did last year, I was in three scenes and I had, you know, I had a few lines, but like, I was able to memorize them that morning.
Right.
And we did like 50 takes.
And it was in English.
Yeah, it was in English. We did 50 takes in between each take. Six people rush up to you and like touch up your makeup and make sure you're not shiny. It's just like so easy and crazy. And in opera, we just, so much is required of us. And in TV, all that's required is like you memorized your lines, are able to take direction, and can like find a spike mark to stand on. It's really kind of silly.
And understand. I remember needing to understand camera direction, like the first big commercial I did. I had a friend that was like, you know, you need to know what camera left and camera right is. And I was like, thanks so much, because I didn't know. I was going in very green, you know, and pretending like I knew what I was doing. But I think you're right. Like, also when I, you know, I had gone from musical theater in undergrad and not really doing anything with that, then to an opera career. And when I started going back to musical theater and I was taking auditions on, you know, like as an equity member, like I was never nervous. I could be really nervous for opera auditions, but never for musical theater or even to read for commercials and stuff. I mean, sure, there's like an awareness of like, what am I doing? How is this different? Let me try to understand the way this works. But as far as like being afraid, that wasn't really a factor for me. The way I might be like going in and singing my toughest aria that has like all that crazy movement or something. I'm like, oh, am I going to get all the notes today? And it's just, it's different. There's a level of like, whatever, with walking in on a musical theater audition.
And also, in opera auditions, though, like, you have to sing your hardest aria and put your best foot forward. And then you've presented a list of six other arias that are excruciatingly difficult.
Yes.
Some of which are impossible to sing after the one you just sang, and you need to be ready. So it's like so hard, these auditions,
it's
and you
true.
Have like 15 minutes to
right,
sing.
Right.
And in musical theater, it's like 16 bars.
Right.
You're
real
out.
Quick.
There's not
or
really
if it's a voiceover
to,
commercial.
Yeah.
It's 3 seconds and you're
it's
done.
So it's so quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of my TV auditions, I'm just like, "Ma'am, you have to come with me," and that's my only line.
Sounds
and
really good in your voice, though. That was really nice.
I
everyone would replay that.
No, but that's like all my TV roles are like
right.
FBI agents and security guards and silly one-liners. And like, I actually went in for a recurring role on TV last week, and it was my first time going in for a recurring role. And it was a very different game because there's 4 pages of dialogue and actual character development,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know, you know, the character's going to come back, and so you need to tell a lot more in that audition than a one-liner. But so that's where it kind of turns into an opera audition.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I get that. Yeah.
I feel like opera teaches us so much, just like to be on your game.
But in general,
oh, yeah.
it just seems like you're having a lot more fun. Like the stakes are a little different.
They're
mm-hmm.
different. Yeah, I don't know why.
Because
it
I think
yeah.
there's PTSD from conservatory.
Yeah.
When you have a room full of voice students that are all sitting there criticizing you.
There's
right?
that, and there's the, you know, there's the young artist game. I know I definitely did years of young artist auditions and programs. And I mean, I auditioned 6 times for Glimmerglass before I was accepted
mm-hmm.
in, and then I did 2 years there. I was like, hey, I made it finally. But I mean, like the kind of scrutiny you feel you're under, also being one of 700 applicants, and maybe they're going to take 20 or 30 singers. It's just, you know, it's not that there aren't 700 applicants for an acting role. There's bazillions of actors
mm-hmm.
and very many talented ones, so no offense to everyone else who's focusing solely on that, but I think because we've had to do this like level, it just feels like the other things are different and maybe
right.
there's less
right,
pressure.
Right. So conversely, what have you learned from your non-opera work that helps you when you're on an opera set?
I mean, I feel guilt listening to your story because I skipped all that. I skipped the young artist programs. I skipped all those years. I didn't do a conservatory program.
Right.
I got a theater degree. And I feel that sometimes in opera, like I didn't pay my dues by doing all that. But I also had
it's
to
right.
spend a lot of time catching up and getting language training and things that I didn't get in my programs. But so when I first started out in opera, my strengths were just acting and movement and
mm-hmm.
trying to be a physical storyteller and fully inhabiting a character with my body in ways that, it's not that opera singers weren't trained in them, but like I did 7 years of dance and 7 years of all different styles of acting, you know, a year alone on Meisner and a year alone on Shakespeare and all
yeah.
this stuff that like they just don't have time for in these conservatory
right.
programs for opera. And they should, because it's the same skill and the same storytelling skills. And how many times are we telling Shakespearean stories in opera?
Yeah.
Like, we should know Shakespeare, but there's just not time.
Yeah.
So
I think one of the fascinating things about you, Katrina, when both in Elixir and Barbara Seville, you were active every moment.
Mm.
You were
yeah.
you weren't stealing the scene, but you were in character doing something that was pertinent to your character at every moment. I remember in Elixir, you're like rubbing your feet and you're like, like, here they go again. But it was so beautiful to see because you just don't see that on the opera stage.
I was like talking to Zach because we're both doing this production together right now and I'm doing a lot of watching and I was just saying, you vibrate at all times when you're on stage. I can see why you're exhausted. But I feel like that's something from it, you know, because I'm coming from a different background a little bit, but that I also brought, like, I was always a natural singer. I wasn't
mm-hmm.
great at technique. I didn't really know it. And I got through undergrad with a lovely, really wonderful teacher. But she admitted to me herself, she's like, you're going to be needing to learn more about technique going forward into grad school. Like,
mm-hmm.
I've been just kind of working it with what I had. And I, like, bombed in grad school because I couldn't figure out my vocal technique. But the comments I would get then and forward for years was like, you're such a great actress, wow.
Huh.
Because like, that's the first thing people could say, because vocally it wasn't very pretty. I needed to figure it out. So that's been a strength for me, just kind of,
and now
you
I
know
feel
what
bad
I mean?
Saying what I said about your acting.
Oh my God, it doesn't bother me anymore. Now I can take it as a compliment. When I was young and I didn't have, you know, and yes, but when I knew that like I didn't have it together vocally, I was like, I want someone to tell me my voice is beautiful,
right.
beautiful once. And now sometimes they do that, so yay. But I think that that was just something that was inherently what I was bringing if
mm-hmm.
nothing else was working,
mm-hmm.
you know? But and like, now I still try to.
On a sick day, that's all you have is your acting. Yeah, like when your voice isn't working the way you want. Yeah, you can get through and, you know, I don't know. It's.
You have to be alive. Like,
you really do.
So many people, I think, rest on the vocals. The vocals, that sounds so like pop. The rest on the vocal beauty or like the perfect line or the perfect phrasing. And I think that's all, that's what opera is about. But it's not all it's about, because it's about life and it's about experience. And it's, and I think I get so excited when I see people who are alive on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I get so pissed off when they're not, when they're just giving me pretty phrases or acting it and being on, kind of on top of the character, like riding on the top in a superficial way.
It makes it inaccessible, and our job is to invite the audience in and sympathize with our journey, whatever the character's journey is. And you, I mean, it's just really important. You can't get by anymore just thinking about music.
Yeah. Have you had colleagues come up to you and say, hey, you know, who should I contact about getting into commercials or
and the DMs on Instagram nonstop, especially from young singers who are just like so eager to piece together a career, and they're stuck in the young artist programs and making $200 a week and starving. They really want to know, how can I get onto Broadway? How can I do commercial?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's not an easy answer for that. It's still a hustle, and it's actually really exhausting, because then you have many hustles going on because they're not all the same.
So both of you, speaking of hustle, are extremely active on social media.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's like amazing. You've got it going on.
So that's definitely part of building your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And for both of you, it's very different than, say, Lisette Oropeza, who's a, you know, a goddess. You know, but it's still not that traditional opera route. I mean, you're in like all these designer jackets, and you're.
But I
found
them myself.
So it's, how are you cultivating your social media brand to help extend your brand?
Yeah.
Just trying to invite people in. And like, I reply to every comment and every message because I think it's our duty. Like, there's this staggering statistic that only 5% of the country has experienced an opera.
Oh.
So if someone reaches out to us, we have a duty to be welcoming and inviting and let them get a glimmer of what the process is and get them in the doors. I think Instagram is such a great tool for that. It's really important.
I love that a lot. And you're so, like, honestly, I look at your Instagram, I'm like, man, he's good at this. Like, it's
it takes a lot of time.
It does. And it takes thought about, like, how to use hashtags that are going to attract people and help them to understand what your point is. And, like, and I've been doing that myself. I'm a little more scattered because I'm like, oh, here's my cute dog. And but I, like, it's just about kind of giving a picture of, like, the lifestyle, what's going on. And,
But breaking stereotypes, too, about opera, because that's our biggest battle, you know? Right.
I want to be the silly girl, like, that's also, like, the silly woman, the fun woman, like, whatever, who can also be a really passionate character on stage, who can play a queenly type or whatever, but I don't have to be that every moment of my life. I just can't do it. I know that that's what some people want. Not everybody, but I feel like sometimes people want that of opera singers, especially I feel like sopranos get that expectation. I just don't want to be that.
Yeah.
I just want to be a dorky, fun person who also can be, you know,
it's
dramatic.
So much better than the alternative, because we see people kind of failing with it also, and the biggest fail I see is when singers refer to themselves in third person in a very formal way, like, Mrs. So-and-so will be appearing at Carnegie Hall tonight. It's like, we know it's you. Can you please stop? Like, just be normal. Like, we want to connect with you. Be normal.
Yeah, and I think, well, as you were talking, I kept thinking about, oh, gosh, it's got to be a decade ago, and I don't know if it was Instagram or Facebook or MySpace or whatever it was. But
Friendster.
Yeah. Right. Okay,
but there was a picture of Anna Netrebko holding her baby on a balcony, and I think it was snowing or something, and she was in a bikini. If memory serves correct, it may not. But there was all of this hullabaloo about, like, oh, my gosh, she's a horrible mother, and but she's being quirky and she's being herself. And I think through all of this is this element of authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, you're actually, you're inviting people in because you're just being yourself.
Right.
And you can be as quirky or not quirky as you want to be, but people are getting to know you, and then you're generating more followers.
And getting them in the doors at the opera houses.
Right.
First time opera goers.
Do you think, I mean, you have a very strong social media presence. Your colleague, Anthony Wealth Costanzo, has a very strong media presence. Both of you are involved in the Akhenaten, which is now officially sold out, from what I understand. Do you think that has lent to that, that it's sold out, that you have these strong media?
Absolutely, yeah. Because we've been drumming up buzz about it for a long time, and I'll say publicly, we were nervous that, you know, the Met might not do enough because it was a new piece, and traditionally new pieces are really hard to sell.
Yep.
And Satyagraha didn't sell out, you know, so it didn't have that same buzz.
Right.
But was still a critical hit. But we, you know, Anthony and I, it's our fourth time doing this show over the last 3 years, and we really wanted it to be like the biggest sensation. So perhaps we hit it too hard, but it is sold out now.
I think you'll do well. I don't know if you've heard this, but my husband Bob like follows someone who works here at Opera Philadelphia, and he was saying he's looking for trying to get tickets for Akhenaten, and it was like hashtag the Hamilton of Opera.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to get tickets to get in the door right now.
Yeah.
And this is very much a tangent, but you've committed so much at this opera that you've tattooed the symbol on your chest.
Yeah, I do. I have an Akhenaten tattoo, yes.
It's okay.
What kind of tattoos do you have, Katrina?
Well, I can't really. No, I'm kidding. I never did it. Freshman year of college, we all drove to Dallas because I'm from Oklahoma, and like eight of us friends had a weekend in Dallas, and everyone got a tattoo or a piercing, and somehow I came out unscathed. I was a wuss. I was like, I've never done ink. My husband has it all over him. I haven't done it.
I have five. Yeah. It's a little much,
I like the Akhenaten.
That's the best.
It's real cool.
Real
cool. Looks like it hurt.
It was actually not bad.
No?
No.
Okay.
And I got it here in Philly. Philadelphia Eddie's famous tattoo shop.
Interesting. So, getting back to this initial conversation, did you have a moment when you said, all right, I don't actually, well, I guess this is more for you, Katrina, where you said, it's okay for me to not just be an opera singer.
Hmm.
And I can explore other things that aren't Mozart and Strauss and stuff.
Right. Hmm. I had to think, because there was a moment when it came back around, like it came back from full circle, because I abandoned musical theater in general, like at least professionally, to do opera. But it was when I was a young artist, the second year at Glimmerglass, they did Kiss Me, Kate. And the staff there, a couple people on the staff knew that I could belt healthfully and not blow my cords out. And they were pulling for me they were thinking about having a young artist do the Lois Lane Bianca role. And they ended up giving it to, I mean, I auditioned and got right to the end of the process, but they ended up giving it to a dancer who could do triple turns, so what can I say? And I can do one, just the one, and I'm upright at least at the end. So, I ended up covering that role and doing the cover performance, and that kind of set off a more in front of people acceptance of it's okay. And I did, I also did a concert that summer with Stephen Blyer and four or five of us Glimmerglass artists who were doing musical theater in this concert with him, and I was like the belter. I sang all the belter songs, and it was very public. So after that, I started getting some offers for musical theater with opera companies. Like I did A Sound of Music.
Because that happened recently, too, and like they're all doing musicals now.
Yeah.
Like in the last 5 years especially, it's just like everyone's doing a musical.
Right.
Even companies that said they would never do a musical.
Right.
They're doing a musical.
Right.
Selling those seats.
And they sell. Yeah. So.
How do you feel about Broadway singers going the opposite way? Victoria Clark, Kelly O'Hara.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, Kelly's trained as an opera singer.
Yeah.
That's where she started.
And I were roommates.
Were you? Oh, no kidding.
We were at Oklahoma City University at the same time. And my senior year, we were roommates.
Oh, my God.
And we held all four parties that year for the shows that we did. But it's interesting because she was a vocal performance major, very solid. She did stuff with the operas there. And that last year that we were roommates, we both auditioned for the Magic Flute for Queen of the Night. I didn't get it. She did, and I was Pamina.
Huh.
And
crazy.
She was singing Queen of the Night.
That's insane.
Can you imagine?
No,
and now,
fascinating.
Like, but she's, I mean, she's very capable. She's
soubrette.
Yeah, she can do all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because we did South Pacific together, Kelly and I, for over a year,
Wow.
Yeah, she was amazing. But I would always listen, especially to her and Paolo Jatte, who just, you know, he came over from the Met. And I was like, these voices are, you know, very rounded and resonant and opera voices, you know, but just happened to be on Broadway. And I think it's great. I mean, we have to tear down the wall between opera, musical theater, and Broadway people coming to the Met is great. Danny Burstein even being there, and, you know, Flatermouse, so exciting.
And frankly, I would love more opera voices on Broadway.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially
for
when
sure.
you're talking about, like, the golden age of, of Broadway and these, like, you know, can we expand the orchestras?
Yeah.
I know there's not always room in those pits,
right,
but, like,
right.
just, like, having these voices that can really fill
so
it out.
So it's interesting. I learned Carousel on a used LP that was Roberta Peters, Alfred Drake, Lee Venora, Norman Traigle, Clara Mae Turner, I think, was in it. But legit voices, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
for that score, as it should be,
right?
Too.
And then you know you go to your local company, and you're like, I can't listen to it.
Well, there's been a shift
too,
because what used to be a baritone musical theater is now tenor, and the advent of the baritenor has torn down everything. But also this thing in musical theater where you have to be versatile and do everything, which we don't have as much in opera.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to both sing Wagner and like the Queen of the Night. Like they let you off the hook.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
in musical theater you do. You have to do everything. So it's like you're not allowed to just be a legit singer. You have to do pop and rock and anything you're asked for.
Right.
And I think that's kind of to the detriment of some of the classics and the way they're cast now, personally.
Mm.
I don't know.
So is there isn't quite the Fach system on Broadway.
Because, like, look at Lieutenant Cable in South Pacific. That's
a
classical baritone, and it's cast as a tenor now in musical theater.
Huh.
Yeah. And they built it, and it's weird.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's all built.
I mean, no offense to any of my colleagues who did that.
It's not
role.
So. It's not such an enchanted evening after all.
It's enchanted in a different way.
Right.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear more, like, just voice sometimes, you know, just
some full resonant singing
mm-hmm.
that doesn't
right.
depend fully on a microphone.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you
right.
can sing healthfully 8 times a week.
Yeah.
And then there's this myth that, like, it's impossible and we just have to rely on microphones, and it's not true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's next for you guys? Outside of opera and in opera, but I guess that's all dependent upon an audition, if it's outside of opera.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You've got
I don't know, lots of operas and weird stuff. I just say yes to everything. But I've been actually doing a Broadway solo show that kind of recaps my years in New York and on the 3 Broadway shows I did and some off-Broadway stuff. And so I've been traveling that around, which is a lot of fun.
And then you were part of the Bearded Ladies Late Night Snacks.
Yeah.
During
oh my
gosh.
Yeah, I premiered my Sally Bowles.
Yes.
God, I couldn't go that night, and I only got to see little video clips. I was like, oh, I'm so sad I missed this. It looked so fun.
I had some really, like, conservative... I did my solo show in Alaska, and I have a diverse fan base of ladies of a certain age, and I posted that Sally Bowles video, and some of them were delighted, and some of them were outraged.
Sorry,
I mean, my butt was out. That's
true. Yeah, but that was great. Come on. I loved it. I thought it was the best thing ever.
It makes you a well-rounded performer.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's really funny that having done, like, what I've been doing recently, which is, I don't know, I'm learning some new opera rep and kind of moving into an interesting new world with that. We'll see where that goes. But wildly enough, my next gig is... doing Lois Lane, Bianca, and Kiss Me, Kate.
Okay.
After 11 years. I covered it 11 years ago. Now I'm actually going to do it with Intermountain Opera in Montana. And it's like, wow, okay, cool.
Because
I'm singing like German and some Czech rap right now. I'm very rounded and keep it, you know, very... And like I'm just going to absolutely switch the little lever on that one to go sing that and act that and be very...
Now, is that
flippant.
Difficult to switch gears like that?
Do you know what? I think for me, it's just a way of approaching the voice. And it's, you know, like there's actually some things I want to do. We'll see how the conductor that's on the show feels about it. I thought it might be fun to throw in some like crazy high notes, you know, but from a belt.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. It might be too disgusting to try that. But like just to make it fun, be like, look, she does these crazy high notes in this song.
Yes.
Could be neat. Like, meh.
I'm into
But I'm into it. So we'll see. It might be gross. But,
yeah.
Yeah, though I think it's like, for me, it's just like a brain switch and how am I doing this now? And,
keeps you fresh, though.
Keeps you fresh.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine, because it's always, there's a huge variety of what you're doing and not like your 100th Mimi or something.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Especially working on new operas and being in the room with a composer, they want to know often what you can do that's different and exciting. Mm-hmm. Like when we were doing Bring the Waves with Missy, she was like, what's the highest note you can sing? And then she's like, well, what's your highest falsetto? Can you belt? What if you screamed? Mm. How high would you scream? You know, and all these things that don't fit into the traditional opera box. But that's what, you know, that's what's happening with new works. It's like composers want to write something for you that's really different and tailored to your voice.
Yeah.
So staying flexible and versatile is so important, I think.
Yeah, I like it. I think.
And fun.
Yeah.
What's the most maybe unusual thing that you've done that you, that your 21-year-old conservatory self would be surprised that you have done?
Well, now I don't know. I have to think of that. Yeah. Your Sally Bowles moment?
That was me at 4 years old. Letting everyone know. I guess I would say Akhenaten, because actually I'm not in a singing role. It's an acting role. And so I have 1,600 words of spoken text of like Shakespearean style. And I didn't have a lot of experience speaking on stage before I did it. The most experience I had was doing like the Pirate King in Pirates of Penzance. So even though I got a theater degree, I was just like doing, you know, I was always thought of as like the singer and not a strong actor in my theater program. And so yeah, doing this show where I really am doing things I never thought I would be capable of doing. It was just like pushed by a director, you know, like we experimented and he was like, you know, just be brave, try something. And I did something that felt absolutely insane to me. And he was like, great, that was a 3. Now let's take it to a 10.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And now I'm like doing things that I didn't know I could do, which is cool.
Dude, you're a 10. You're totally a 10. You are. No, what I was trying to think, I think something that would have shocked me, and maybe after we're done, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that would have been a good example. But, like, as, like, a, this is how it's supposed to be. I did a Janáček opera called Zmrtvého domu. Y'all get me if I said it wrong. But it's from the House of the Dead. And I did that in Bonn when I was in Germany. And it was just the whole thing. Like, it didn't look like opera. It was very, like, it was a 3-level set that each level could move independently, and we were climbing through it. We didn't have intermissions. We stayed on stage the entire time.
Wow.
So it was very exhausting and amazing. It's still one of the most thrilling things I've done. And I was playing a pants role and, you know, having dancers lift me and, you know, while 30 feet above the stage, like, lift me on the edge of this set. And just, that was just real cool and not what I thought beautiful fancy opera would be, but I loved it.
That's
and,
like,
yeah.
Sounds like some of the most exciting things happening in opera now, though. Like, when I saw the nose at the Met, I was absolutely flabbergasted by what the artists were asked to do.
Yeah.
And but also look at Opera Philadelphia's Semele. Like, that was insane.
Right.
Speaking of dance
it's
and
amazing.
Being lifted and like, you know, these opportunities to break the mold and surprise audiences, that's what we need to be doing, really. Because stand and sing is dead, and no one cares, I think. Is that controversial?
I know it shouldn't be at this point, because, I mean, I think...
It's dead.
You still come around to see it every once in a while. So is there anything maybe on your bucket list or your bag of talents that you would like to explore on stage that you haven't been asked to do yet?
I have a dream of doing like a solo show that, like a one-person opera that incorporates all my special skills, like playing the marimba and like all the things I do that I don't get to do, you know? And something that, I mean, anytime as a singer you're excited by seeing a role on paper that explores your full range, and that's really rare, I think. And then your full acting range and being able to go to places that are exciting, and especially like as a basic and stereotypes, like I play villains so much and fathers, and you know that's all good and well, but what's most exciting is when you're working with the director who lets you go to a new place with that, and that's rare.
So can you, before we get to your answer, Katrina, is there an aspect of that with what you did in Love for Three Oranges?
Yeah, sure. I mean, everything was unexpected in that, and exciting and fun. And, you know, they said, oh, by the way, you're going to be a chicken. Is that okay? And I was like, of course it is. Like,
great.
And then, you know, the laying of the egg was new for this production. And
so
Alessandro was like, do you think it would be possible? And I was like, yes. Let's do that. Like, anything. You know,
that's
but
cool.
I like say yes to a director before they finish their question, because I just want to do something different always, you know. Makes it exciting.
Yeah.
challenge me, please. Like,
yeah.
Let's do something.
Right.
Yeah.
The music's hard enough, but let's add some.
But like,
it
takes
your mind off
it. Yeah, it takes your
yeah.
mind off the music
yeah.
and the challenge of it. It takes your mind away from standing in front of 4,000 people. Like keep my mind active and let me do something crazy.
It's amazing the acrobatics you can do vocally when you're just like so involved in something
yeah.
else. It just happens because you've worked it out, you
totally.
Know, in the practice room,
totally.
And then they just it comes out. Just
what was that? That Netrebko like laid over backwards and put her head in the pit upside down.
Right.
Oh my God.
It
was like the Bellini. The one of them, all of them, yeah. But she was like, hey, this is okay now, we're going to
yeah.
do this. And then all of a sudden, you know, people.
But you guys mentioned
Semele.
That's
yeah.
what, you know, you have Amanda Forsythe being lifted
yeah.
up while she's doing
so
these
great.
Crazy runs. And so
yeah.
really probably liberated her vocally. Because
I would imagine, right?
Yeah, actually, that was kind of like, I was like, yeah, this is not the rep I sing, but man, girl, like, she blew me away. That
yeah.
whole thing, that whole production
was
outstanding.
Yeah.
It was really... I wasn't bored at Handel, guys. I was
mm-hmm.
really riveted.
Yeah.
It was so great. So great. But I would say that my answer is it's very similar to yours. Like, I feel like my agent and I talk about it, and she's like, I always have my eye out for something for you. Like, we're looking for that kind of new music role that I'm going to really fit into. Of course,
mm-hmm.
there's all the other stuff, but there's the idea of a vehicle where you can really sink your teeth into
yeah.
it, and it can really play on your best abilities,
mm-hmm.
and that it does play you up as an actor and allow you to dig into that. And I do long for more opportunities to use my comic abilities, or, you know, in opera. And there's not as much of that, especially for sopranos, I feel like.
Yeah.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's there sometimes, but, you know.
You make a really funny Violetta.
Hey, can we find a way to make that little... That seems kind of comical. What can we do? All right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I, you know, it's, there are things like, you know, I sing the aria from Three Decembers a lot for auditions
mm.
because I just love getting to be this person who, there's just a hint of a little bit of, you can turn the sides of your mouth up at her a little bit, like, gosh, woman. But, you know, because she's just dealing with so much. And I also, it's, you know, not everyone loves Minotti, but I love, The Old Maid and the Thief,
mm.
and I love her aria because she's like, oh,
so,
and you get to see a little bit of this, like,
yeah,
frustration
yeah.
with life, which can be funny, and I'd like to have more of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Especially in auditions, like, anything you can, any piece you find where you feel like you can bring your full being to it, and you're not,
mm.
doesn't feel like you're putting on a suit of someone else,
right,
you know, where you could really bring your heart to it, because then it just clicks in, and you don't have to work in a weird way.
What is it? What is sort of an audition piece like that you?
Yeah, I do Kleigert's aria from Billy Budd, because that's just like my jam. It feels like in my
yeah.
voice, it feels like it was written for me. But also, like, being a gay man playing Kleigert is very personal to
yeah.
me, and I have every experience of, you know, middle school locker room being called, you know,
mm-hmm.
things we don't say, and I can bring that to that and know what it is to live in that shame, and then. It's, I just give that, and it's a dark place to go to, but I can just shut it off immediately afterward,
yeah, yeah.
you know. Yeah, and making opera personal like that is, I think, really important, because that's what makes it accessible.
Absolutely. Well, Ken, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed speaking with you guys.
Thanks.
This has
thank
been lovely.
You.
It's a fun idea.
And I think I'm really excited to see what comes next for you guys
thanks.
With Opera Philadelphia and beyond. So
yeah.